Welcome to the Sandler Ireland Sales Podcast. My name is Paul Anigan, and my guest today is Nick Schädelbauer. Nick describes himself as a multilingual, results-oriented entrepreneur, business owner, and sales professional with a proven sales proficiency, plus an expertise in technical, strategic, and competitive sales. Nick, you're very welcome to the show.
Hi, Paul. Thanks for having me.
Nick, take us back to the younger Nick. How do you remember your formative years? Where did you grow up?
So originally, I grew up in Latin America. So I grew up speaking Spanish and picked up English and German on the way and got a chance to live in different countries. So living in Guatemala, El Salvador, the US, and Germany.
And tell me, what took you to Germany then? Because that's a big jump.
I think that was pure coincidence. You know, I studied in the US. I did mechanical engineering. I started working in the engineering world. I actually got to go to Texas, where I never thought I spent time. And I was working for a company that was in dire need of engineers that spoke at least three languages. And they were looking for these people in Germany. So they made me a nice offer and I took it.
So you started out your professional career then as an engineer?
Yes, the first 5 years of my career were in engineering. I started in mechanical engineering, switched over to electrical, and at the end did a lot with software engineering.
So how do you make that leap then, that transition from engineer into sales? Tell us about that journey.
That was definitely not something I was looking to do. I was quite happy as an engineer. I was working here in Germany as an engineer until my boss came to me one day and said, "Hey, Nick, you want to go into sales?" And I wasn't too fond of that question. I actually declined at the beginning until he explained a little bit more what that meant. So he meant that my salary was going to go up. I was going to get commission. I was going to get a car, a phone, and a laptop. So after thinking about it for about a second and a half, I said yes. And I joined the sales force.
And tell me a little bit then about maybe some of the early struggles you encountered in making that transition from engineering into sales.
So I think I probably had the typical struggle. So first I got sales training, which meant go get them, tiger, and just hit the road. And that's what I did. You know, I went out there. I was used to being an engineer. I was used to explaining stuff and figuring out stuff. So I would go to my customers and present and show them all the cool things we could and ask them how much they wanted. And I wasn't really successful with that. It wasn't actually until I got into key account management that I started thinking about what I'm doing. And after being beat up by this professional salespeople, professional purchasers, I started questioning myself. I said, you know, there must be a better way. And I started out trying other things. You know, that's also the first time I started to listen to Sandler podcasts. I started to read about Sandler and I tested a few things out, which at least for me worked really, really well.
When you say you tested a few things out, can you give us some examples?
Well, I think the most important one was not, showing up and throwing up. So going somewhere with the mission of acquiring information rather than with the mission of giving information. That was a huge game changer because I had this head trash that, you know, I wasn't allowed to ask questions. So I thought I was supposed to show up and just open up my cards. And that just wasn't true. You know, I got there and I started out asking one or two questions. You know, don't get me wrong. I wasn't the full professional from the beginning. So I got there, asked one or two questions, and I noticed that the people actually answered my questions. And then I thought, hey, you know, this is fun. And I started asking more and more questions. And that just made my sales life that much easier.
And how did that then translate into your own personal success?
Well, you know, I was having to work less. I was closing more opportunities. I think all in all, I was getting closer to the truth. So you know that very often when you're out there with your existing customers or with prospects, they're not going to be 100% honest to you. So I started figuring out that the more truth I get on the table, the easier it would be to close sales. So I think by following that strategy, that upped my game by far.
So you say that people are not always truthful with you. Why do you think that is? I mean, is it not going to just save them a lot of time if they put their cards on the table, you put your cards on the table? What's behind all that?
Yeah, I wish it were like that. I think, you know, it's our fault. You know, us as salespeople, we've treated our customers bad in the past. We've used the information they gave us against them or in a negative way. So I think we've trained them to be the way they are and to be scared of us. You know, they might feel that every piece of information they give us, we might use it to do some sort of kung fu move on them. So I think it's just us being bad salespeople in the past.
I'd like to take you back again to some of your earlier experiences, because I'm a believer that your formative years, those maybe 6, 7, 8 years of age, have a huge impact on how effective you become in the long term in business. So I wanted to understand, from your growing up in South America, what was it you feel in that background that set you up to be successful in sales, successful in business?
I would say the most important part is this wish to be an entrepreneur. I think that has been with me since I was little. I always saw people around me working hard to make it bigger, and I like what I saw. So from early on, I knew I wanted to be an entrepreneur, and I figured out that a very important part of being an entrepreneur is being good at sales. And that's what was also one of the main reasons why I accepted that first sales role, although I wasn't really ready for it. I thought, okay, you know, this is something that's going to complete my path and help me be an even better entrepreneur in the future.
But what is it about that thing called entrepreneur that was attracting you? Because it wasn't the word. It wasn't, you know, you didn't open a book and go, oh, entrepreneur, I like that. What is it about the characteristics of being an entrepreneur that you were gravitating towards?
So there's many factors I truly enjoy about that. So one is, of course, the challenge. Taking something that's maybe not there yet or in a very early stage and bringing that forward, breaking barriers, creating something, creating additional value to what is already there, dealing with all kinds of problems and challenges. You know, I just never wanted to be an office person working from 9 to 5. I wanted to have different tasks in different areas and different industries and just, you know, figure out problems along the way.
You talk about breaking down barriers. Share with us maybe an example of some early barriers that you had to overcome that had a substantive transformative effect on you.
I think the most important barriers I had to overcome were not of technical nature, so not about know-how or knowing how to do something. It was more about my beliefs. You know, so growing up in Latin America, I had a lot of very conservative beliefs. I grew up in an environment where children were seen but not heard. You know, you weren't really allowed or wasn't accepted to voice your opinion. It wasn't accepted to challenge the elders or the status quo. So dealing with that was probably the biggest barrier I had.
So how did you do that? How did you overcome that? Because that's one hell of a barrier.
Yeah, I think it was just waiting until you're mad enough, waiting until that inner energy explodes. I wish it would have been earlier. It would have made my life later a lot easier. But I think in my case, it was just close your eyes and do it. You know, what's the worst thing that could happen?
Interesting approach. And so Maybe you could share with us some of the lessons you learned in going through that process that took you to where you are today.
So lessons I learned, you know, first of all, I would say maybe not everything that shines is gold or not everything that shines is precious. You know, when you're out there talking to people, talking to companies, people tend to exaggerate or to change reality. Everything looks so great. Everything looks so good. So it's only until you look behind the scenes, only when you start challenging the information you get, start checking the information from different points of view, do you really get to the core of what's going on.
So that's interesting then. So let's, for example, pretend you're in a situation where you've got a prospect across the table and maybe they're blowing smoke. What you're hearing from them, you your gut is telling you it's there's another story somewhere else. How do you go after that and find out the truth without upsetting the prospect in the process?
Well, you know, Paul, there's so many different scenarios out there that it's hard to give you a straight answer. You know, one option might be to stay behind the pendulum. You know, so whatever they're telling you, whatever information you're getting, you know, try to be a little bit more negative. So let's pretend that the prospect says something that sounds nice. You know, oh, I really like your offer. Or, hey, what you're bringing to the table looks really interesting. So challenge that. Not in a mean way. You know, don't attack them. But you could say something along the lines of, hey, dear prospect, I'm glad you like it. What was it that caught your attention? You know, as to give you a slight example. Or if somebody's being negative, if somebody's saying, well, you know, let me think about it, or, you know, you're one of, or I've seen this a million times, or we did that in 1983, you know, go a little bit more negative. Say something along the lines of, well, it sounds to me like it doesn't matter what I say or what I bring to the table. You've already decided that there's no way we're ever going to do business. And then just shut up and see what comes.
Whoa, 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 whoa. But salespeople are taught to be positive.
Yes, and you should definitely have a positive attitude. I agree with that. But that doesn't mean that we have to go to our customers, to our prospects, and just be overly positive. You know, that will typically have a negative effect on the conversation we're going to have.
So what kind of belief system, mindset do you need to have then to be able to take that position of being less enthusiastic than a prospect, for example?
I think you have to really believe in what you do. You have to believe that what you're bringing to the table has true value to your customers. And I think one of the most important things you need to do in sales, and this is regardless of what strategy you're following, is, you know, create options. This is something that I've seen with all situations I'm faced, be it sales, be it marketing, be it hiring people, choosing companies. You know, as long as you have options, you're fine. You're going to be fine.
So are you saying that you have options, or you should be presenting your prospect with options?
It depends. So I'm mainly saying that you should have options as a salesperson, for example. You know, if your pipeline consists of 5 opportunities and you need to close 4 of those, it's going to be really hard to be successful in that role. So you really want to make sure that you have a lot more options, a lot more opportunities that you really need to make your target. But that also applies to meetings. You know, when we go out there, we don't really know what exactly we're going to be faced with. So have options, be relaxed, you know, train some different things that you can do when people attack you, when people are throwing smoke at you, when, you know, when things just go wrong in a sales interview. Have some options that will help you relax and be more efficient at what you're doing.
The picture you paint of sales scenarios sounds very different to the one I think we're brought up to believe in terms of our job is to go out, put a smile on our face, and present our features and benefits to prospects. You're talking about, you know, people not necessarily being 100% truthful with you, throwing grenades at you, creating sometimes a hostile environment. That sounds very, very different. Am I exaggerating that? Is that reality? Is that a part of it?
Yeah. So I would say in most sales cases, you are going to be faced with any of those things you just mentioned, which doesn't mean that all prospects and all customers are like that. You know, of course, the stronger our relationship, the stronger we've proven common success in the past, the more willing they will be to share with you the truth. So, but I would say, yeah, in most cases, when you go out there, you are going to be faced with some sort of smoke. You might see it, you might not.
Interesting. So come up to present day. Tell me a little bit about your business and where some of the pressure points are now, because I'm a believer that no matter how successful you are, that every level of success brings its own challenges and its own obstacles. So maybe you could tell us a little bit about some of the obstacles that success brings and how you plan to overcome them.
So obstacles that success brings. Of course, adapting to new technologies, I would say, is one of them. You know, in the past, very often when we did customers, now we're seeing a very strong move towards digital solutions, to learning management systems, to webinars, not as a standalone product, but really in a combination with the training that you're doing. So yeah, I would say they're learning new technologies, investing also in new technologies, and keeping up to date.
And what's working for you right now and what isn't working? So as you play with these technologies and experiment with them and try to adapt to them, what do you feel is worthwhile, is worth people spending their time on, and where do you still have doubts?
So I would say the technology itself works well. One of the challenges that I am seeing, though, is when you're having a webinar with a lot of people on the line. I sometimes have webinars with 60, 70, 80 people logged in. If you're only going to do it frontal, so if you're only going to be talking, I don't believe there's much efficiencies in that. So what I try to do is always involve my audience. So I let them know up front that I'm going to be unmuting their microphones, asking them questions. I also use polls to get their opinions, just to keep them engaged. So that works really well.
Interesting. The unmuting the microphone, I've tried that before without a lot of success. Have you any tips on how to do it effectively? I'm sure you've done it and it hasn't worked for you. What? How have you adapted to it?
Yeah, so just to paint the right picture, I have gotten stuck, and I have had webinars where I unmute people and nobody's there, or you just hear a car noise, or there's a lot of echo. So that is a problem. So what I've done in the past, or I think that the thing that works best, is to let the people know up front that you're going to be calling on them, and also allow them, not all the time, but allow them to not engage, meaning that if somebody's traveling for business, I mean, I get it. I travel a lot too. Let me know up front, and then I won't call on you. You know, I'll probably ask you to do some homework, to send me something written, maybe 2-3 lines about their favorite part of the webinar or the most important reminder. It's not always about learning new things, but really reminding ourselves of positive behaviors. Mm.
As you talk, it strikes me, because really what you're talking about is engagement.
Yes.
And engagement is something I feel is missing, not just in webinars, but in so many aspects of selling. If you get an email from a stranger, there's no engagement in it. Often those traditional cold calls you get, there's no engagement. It's just a script that's pitched at you. Traditional presentations, there's very little engagement. It's just, here's what we're good at. And is that not what you discovered going full circle by asking questions, that yes, it was an opportunity to discover more, but it was also about engagement, pulling the prospect in?
Yes. And Paul, I think you hit the nail on the head on that one. The better engagement you get, the more beneficial your conversation will be. And again, I'm not saying that you're going to close a sale, but it will be more beneficial in your path to seek the truth, to get the cards on the table. So I'm completely with you on that one.
Okay. So where to next for Nick? What does the future look like? What interests you? What's attracting you in business? Where will you be 5-10 years from now?
That's a good question. You know, my plan says in 5-10 years from now, actually 8 years from now, I'll be the owner of 8 companies. Right now I have 2. I'm looking to work on my next, well, I'm almost done with my next one. So a third one's still coming up this year, and everything's going great. I do have to adapt a little bit more to startups. You know, we have a huge startup community here in Germany. So I'm looking to get more involved in that. And on the other side, I also like working with international companies, those really big companies that have very complex structures. Very often they have a matrix organization. So I think those two groups are my sweet spots. I would like to get more of those customers.
Listening to you talk about where you're going to be sounds to me like you're very goal focused. Talk to me about the role goal setting and planning plays in not just your success, but the success of sales in general?
So I'm a strong believer in goals. We're confronted with so much information, with so many situations, with so many things out there that if you don't know where you're going, it's going to be really hard to take those decisions. It might be little things of, you know, making a cold call or going to a networking event, but it might also be big things like moving countries, moving locations, making major investments in your business. As long as you have goals, it's going to be a lot easier to take those decisions.
Yeah. So it's life by design.
It's life by design. I like to believe that my life is very purposeful. So I like to set goals and follow them. Now, I do change them. So I typically do a yearly review of my goals. They typically don't change hugely, but they might change a little bit. You know, maybe there's a certain industry I was focusing on. I might change that after a year, after gaining more experience in that industry. The same thing regarding my time, how I'm going to invest my time, how much I'm going to work, how much I'm going to relax, how much time I'm going to spend with my friends. Of course, you know, you don't design it down to the last second, but it does give you a direction. It does help me take those important decisions.
So the other thing I wanted to ask you about was work-life balance, because very often people listening to this, you know, they'll listen to other podcasts, and there's people out there who will give the impression that to be successful, you have to put everything else in life on hold. You have to work 18 hours a day, and the other 6 hours you probably spend thinking about what you're going to do in the 18 hours a day. It's a 7-day week process. What are your thoughts on that?
So I'll admit that in my first years in business, that's what it was. So I would say the first 1 or 2 or 3 years, I was actually working 70, 80 hours a week, 7 days a week, trying to get everything started. That's not something that most people can follow through on a long term. So I believe that in my reality, in success means, you know, working about, you know, according to my plans, 30, a maximum of 40 hours a week. And I do put some balance in there. That might be time for my friends, my family, or just for myself.
So what do you like to do for downtime then? How do you recharge your batteries?
It depends. You know, sometimes it'll be, you know, maybe I have a project. I just got back from a project in Australia. So recharging my batteries might be staying there for a few extra days and checking out the country and learning about new cultures and getting to know new people. Other times that might be going to the beach and hanging out with my friends, and sometimes that's hanging out with my brothers and sisters' kids. So whatever the situation is.
So Nick, what advice would you have for people in sales right now who have that same aspiration that you had to go out, make it on their own, but maybe inside, you know, they're doing well in a sales job and there are risks with going out on your own and being self-employed. What advice would you have for them? How can they make that transition?
I think first step would be to think of what you really want. What are your goals? And not just what are they, but why do you really want that? You need to have a very strong why to be able to overcome all types of obstacles you're going to be faced with. Once you figure that out, it's kind of easy. You know, you break it down into milestones. Break it down into pieces you can chew. Set deadlines, set activities, define activities, try out things. And I think one of my favorite sayings, you know, a winner has options. Create options to what you're doing. Don't create just one path and win or fail. I mean, there will be situations like that, but they shouldn't be the standard. So create options for yourself. Break things down into yearly, monthly, even down to weekly behaviors, maybe even daily, depending on what your goals are.
Did you have a mentor or a coach at any point when you were making that transition?
I wouldn't say I had one mentor or one coach. You know, I always like to observe successful people, figure out what was behind their story. You know, remember, people tend not to tell you the full story or the true story. So I like to ask the why question. You know, when I'm looking at people, why did you do that? How did you do that? What's the story behind it? And I think through time, I just got bits and pieces of information from all kinds of sources. partly from my family, partly from other entrepreneurs and my friends, and partly from people that are just openly known.
And so for those times where you struggled, where there must have been times where you questioned yourself, where you felt, will this ever end? Will I ever make it? How did you overcome those humps?
I would add to that list, was it the right decision? So that comes onto that list. How did I overcome those? Again, you know, most of the time, this is just the way I am. You know, in German, we say, close your eyes and go through it. So just do it. I think that was a lot of it. Oftentimes, I thought about, you know, what's the worst case scenario? And I just dealt with that. And in most cases, though, I was just very confident about myself. And I wasn't scared to fail. I think, you know, maybe that's a very important one. I knew that along the lines, I was going to fail. So, for example, when I started to be an entrepreneur, I didn't start one business. I actually started three businesses at a time. One of those is broke by now. The other two are still going or going well.
Excellent. You know, something I found was interesting because I certainly had those moments. And I remember there was one particular guy who I admired his success. And looking at him, he seemed to have it all. He was successful. People talked about him in glowing terms. He made a lot of money. And when you look at that and you look where your situation is, and there's a gulf, a big gulf, sometimes it can be hard. It can be really hard to look at that and say, will I ever, or how do I get there? And what was interesting for me was I was having a conversation with a coach I was working with who happened to know this successful guy and who happened to have, he was a coach to this guy several years earlier. And he told me a story about how this successful guy came to him one night saying, I can't do this. I just can't do this. I've been doing this for a few years now and I'm really struggling to make that breakthrough. And just hearing that story about how this successful guy had been in the exact same position that I had, that kind of normalizing the difficulties, the challenges, gave me the inspiration to continue and to pick up the phone, send another email, go to another networking event, but you know, just to keep going, just to keep going. And as you said, what is the expression in German? Just keep going, push through it.
Yeah, close your eyes and go through.
Close your eyes. That's it. Close your eyes.
Augen zu und durch.
That's it. I love it. I love it. And I think that is, I think you've hit the nail on the head. Don't worry about failure. It's going to happen.
Yeah.
The more you fail, the more you learn. The more you learn, the better you get. The better you get, the more you succeed.
Yeah.
It's being okay with the discomfort of failure, knowing that it's a big part of your success. I think that's huge. Thank you for that. And then the other part is, with that as your background, close your eyes and just go for it and don't look back. I think that's hugely important. I think a lot of people who try to make that jump, that leap, that transition, always keep it open as an option. Well, look, I can always go back and get a job.
Yeah.
And they put a safety net underneath them. And personally, I don't know what you think, but I think that's a mistake.
It definitely makes it harder to break through to new levels. You know, I understand it from a normal person point of view, especially living in Europe or in Germany, a very socialist country at the end of the day. Yeah, you want to have that security. And I get that. The thing is, if that security is the most important thing to you, maybe being an entrepreneur is not the best path forward.
Yeah. Yeah, and maybe that's the first question people have to ask themselves. Are they going to be okay with those dark days when they're going to question themselves? And what's the internal process? Because I also find that people who don't succeed, who give up, it's when they have those difficult days, they start asking the question, what's wrong with me?
Yeah.
Instead of, what do I need to do? What's the next challenge? Whose help do I need? How can I get that? It's their internal thought process that leads them down a different avenue. And I think planning for that, I think, is a big part of it as well.
Yeah. And I think you also bring up an important point. Whose help do I need? you know, one big realization is we can't know everything about everything all the time. And, you know, even as a successful person, you have those dark days. So I think a support network is very important. I have two or three fellow entrepreneurs, you know, we lean on each other when we're having bad days, when we just experience something very negative. You know, we help ourselves back up. You know, we're there for each other. We take the time, we share our thoughts, be it on employees, on investments, on maybe bad decisions that we took. And together, we just come to the realization, you know, it is what it is. We did the best move possible with the chessboard we had. And let's see what can we do to make it better. How are we going to overcome this new obstacle? So having a support network is super important.
Well, that seems to be a positive and a definite place where we need to start wrapping this up. Nick, I really want to thank you for your insights today. They've been hugely valuable. Before I let you go, because we've been talking about support networks and those around us who we look for inspiration and look for help with, as you go through your everyday life and your business and deal with prospects and customers, who do you look to advice to? I don't mean personal as in a coach, but maybe people who, you know, books that you've read, writers that you follow or who you follow on LinkedIn or videos you watch on YouTube that give you a sense of purpose, inspiration, or maybe it's ideas, but just kind of get you in the zone. Maybe you could share with us some examples.
Personally, I'm more of a digital person, so I go online for information. I like to use HubSpot for some good articles out there. Tony Hughes is also pretty interesting. Maybe Colleen Francis. Those are the things that come to mind off the top of my head.
All good people. And as I said, I would agree with you, HubSpot. It's a great source of articles. They bring a lot of stuff into one place. So really useful to any budding entrepreneur, I think. So with that, Nick, again, I want to thank you so much for sharing your valuable insights with us today. Where can people reach you if they want to get in touch?
I think the easiest way to find me would be just to go on LinkedIn, look up my name, Nikolaus Schädelbauer, and you'll see my contact information there. Feel free to reach out. Always glad to have a conversation.
Nick, thanks very much. Appreciate your time today.